Thanks for checking out the Reveal Vineyard podcast. Our mission is simple. Find God, find others, find yourself. That's it. We hope through these conversations, your spirit will be stirred. For more information on Reveal, you can visit our website at www.revealvineyard.com.
The day was rather typical. The shepherd gathers sheep early before the sun makes an appearance, and he herds them out to the feeding ground in hopes of finding something green, something edible and nutritious, springing up from the dry, lifeless dirt. And then when the shepherd gets there, he waits. And he waits. And he waits a little more. And he counts the hours as the sun crawls across the sky, because that's what a shepherd does. The shepherd in our story today is Moses. Until it's time, after sitting for the day, it's time for him to gather the sheep back together and to take them all the way on his journey back home, where he waits again, and he waits until morning, and he gathers his sheep again until the sun, before the sun makes an appearance, and he herds them out into the feeding ground in hopes of finding something breaking through the dry, desolate, dirty, dusty ground. And this was now his life, the routine of his life over and over again, day after day, until one day the release of death comes and he's buried in an obscure, nameless grave. But on this day, the leather-skinned shepherd, something was about to change, although he really didn't expect anything to be different than any other day. Why should today be any different than the some 14,600 days before this one? That's 40 years. Why should this day be any different? After 40 years of tending sheep, Moses no doubt was ready for a change, a break in the uniformity. His life had become all too predictable. Maybe an occasional predator was his only source of excitement throughout his day, throughout his life. But on a particular day, a new chapter was about to be written for him. But not just a new chapter for him, but it would be a pivotal moment in the life of an entire nation. Looking for richer pasture, Moses leads his sheep to the base of Mount Horeb. I have some images there for you to look at. And he'd been here before. It was nothing special, nothing too exciting. But in the distance, we read that something caught his attention. It was a spark. It was a dancing flame. And it was a bush that was consumed with the flame, and yet it was not consumed with the fire. With no particular agenda, a shepherd's calendar is not heavy with ink. He had nothing else to do, and so he goes to explore this burning bush. And at first, it was just curiosity, maybe something to pass the time and to release the boredom, but what started out intrigue ramped up into an encounter that threw a shepherd into the pages of history. A random burning bush in the desert, and if that wasn't enough, out of the flames came a voice. 40 years in the desert, 40 years with sheep, 40 years of routine shattered in one moment. We read it in Exodus 3. This was when the Lord saw that he turned aside to see. God called him out of the bush. Moses, Moses, and Moses said, "Here I am." Then he said, "Do not come near. Take off your sandals off your feet, for the place on which you are standing is holy ground." We're not going to look at this until a while, but notice when "Lord" is all capitalized. We're going to talk about that later. So here it is, a talking bush. Now this is when you hear a voice coming from a bush. This is when you check to see if the mushrooms that you had for lunch were bad, or maybe if they were those special mushrooms, because this is not a common occurrence. And you know, at this point, Moses had two choices. He could either run or he could take off his sandals and see what happens next. And so we look at verse 6. And he said, "I am the God of your father, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob." And Moses hid his face, for he was afraid to look at God. Now look how God introduces himself. He says, "Moses, here's who I am. I am the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob." Now, these were the heaviest of hitters in Jewish history. They were the patriarchs of the Jewish people. They were revered and esteemed. And God was saying, "I am the God of your forefathers, the God of the ages. All of the stories that you heard as a child, that's me. I am that God." And then he continues in verse 7. Then the Lord said, "I have surely seen the affliction of my people who are in Egypt and have heard their cry because of their taskmasters. All of the Hebrew nation was in bondage to the Egyptians. And I know their sufferings. I have come down to deliver them out of the hand of the Egyptian and to bring them out of the land and bring them up to a land, a broad land, a land flowing with milk and honey, to the place where the Canaanites and the Hittites and the Amorites and the Perizzites and the Hivites and the Jebusites. And now, behold, the cry of the people of Israel has come to me, and I also have seen the oppression with which the Egyptians oppressed them. Now, up to this point, the conversation may have been interesting, and it may have been rather intriguing, but it wasn't all that concerning until we get to verse 10, and then God says to Moses, come, I will send you to Pharaoh, that you may bring my people, the children of Israel, out of Egypt. I can see Moses kind of listening to this voice, thinking, wow, this is crazy, and I got some stories to tell when I get back to Midian, and this is really interesting. I'm sorry, you said what? You're going to send who to who? I mean, this had to be a shocking moment that you know, this voice thing, that was cool, but all right, now it's costing something. If you're going to send me, because one day you're a shepherd of sheep, and not even your own sheep, though the sheep of your father-in-law, one day you're just a common shepherd, and the next day you're being spoken to out of a burning bush and being sent to the most powerful man in the world, demanding he release the slave labor he depends on to keep his empire running. With 600,000 men, not including women, not including children. So all of a sudden, here's Moses, common shepherd, boy, just a man coming in and saying, hey, Pharaoh, let these million people go. And Moses is like, I don't know about this. And look how he responds, so much like us today. Exodus 3, verses 10 and 11. Come, God says, I will send you to Pharaoh that you may bring my people, the children of Israel, out of Egypt. But Moses said to God, who am I that I should go to Pharaoh and bring the children of Israel out of Egypt? Those three words, who am I? It's the same question that we wrestle with today over and over and over again. Ever find yourself up against a challenge that seems too great to overcome? You ever stand in the shadow of an enemy who is too large to conquer? Has God ever called you into something that made no sense whatsoever? And our first thought that comes to mind is, God, who am I? There's three little words that choke our faith and limit God's activity in our life. Who am I? I want you to notice, the question is never posed as, who are you? The question never comes from the outside. It's always coming from the inside. If Satan, our enemy, spiritual enemy, would present it to you as, who are you? Maybe we could argue with them, or we could reject that thought, or we could filibuster it. But it always comes from within, and it's hard to argue with a voice that is your own. It sounds like you, it has your mannerisms, and it comes from the depths of you. And so Moses asks the question that I think we all ask at some point. God, who am I? And I think that we easily fill in the blanks in all of our lives, and we all do it, and it all looks differently, but maybe you might have a blank that says, who am I? You want to know who I am? I am dysfunctional. And God, have you forgotten about my past? See, Moses had a past. We're going to talk about that in a moment. God, have you forgotten about who you're really talking to? Or God, have you seen the family I was raised in? Anyone have that one? I'm not saying I do, especially if my mom's here, but you know, have you had that? God, have you forgotten all the things that I've been through? I am dysfunctional. And what about this one? God, I am deficient. That's who I am. God, I've never been someone who's had enough. I've never had what it takes. I've always been lacking in something. I'm deficient, God. Or what about, God, I'm doubtful. God, you want to know who I am? I am a man. I am a woman who has very little faith. Or God, I am depleted. I'm exhausted. And life is hard. And I'm afraid that life has beaten me. And I'm ready to throw in the towel. That's who I am. Satan has a way of using our history to manipulate our insecurities. See, here's the one that played in my mind. Now, 7 years ago, God comes to me and reading a book, and God very clearly said, I want you to start a church. And there was the initial excitement, and then there was the question, who am I? And I wrestled with this, and my wife and I talked about this, and I was like, God, who am I? Hey, God, do you remember, I never finished college. And some of you are like, well, we're not staying at this church. Well, that's who you got, all right? I never finished. And I would say, God, who am I? And I'm not really known for my intellectual prowess. And God, who am I? The enemy will look into your past and use anything to cause you to doubt what God has for you in your future. And this is, you know, you probably have your own who am I story of what that looks like in your life, where you've asked God, who am I? And Moses knew this all too well. See, Moses, he was born a Hebrew, but he was raised in Pharaoh's home. He was raised in the palace, and he was known as a daughter or a son to Pharaoh's daughter, and he enjoyed all of the benefits of being an Egyptian. I mean, he lived the high life. But one day, 40 years into his life, a Hebrew living as an Egyptian, he sees an Egyptian beating his Hebrew brother. And we don't know if it was on accident or if it was 40 years of guilt of living one way when you were something else, but he stepped in to protect his Hebrew brother, and he kills the Egyptian. And he buries the body in the sand and thinks, all right, if no one saw this, I can get away with it. But then he finds out, word gets around, and now Pharaoh has found out, and Pharaoh is now looking to kill him. And so Moses fled to Midian. He married, and for the last 40 years, he watched sheep for 40. That's all he did. He was a herder of sheep. And now all of a sudden, God shows up. But all Moses can see is his past. All he can see is his insecurity and his mistakes. And for the past 40 years, God, I've been running and I've been hiding. So before anyone else says it, let me just say it. Who am I? Every time God reveals your future, Satan has a way of reminding you of your past, of how you failed, of what you did wrong, of every stupid decision you've ever made, and it replays in the mind, and we ask, who am I? Why me, God? Who am I? Now, Moses knew this all too well because it just wasn't his past, but he couldn't get past his limited resources. In the next chapter, Moses asks God this question. Moses said to the Lord, oh, my Lord, notice one is capital, one is not. I am not eloquent, either in the past or since you have spoken to your servant, but I am slow of speech and of tongue. In other words, Moses was saying, look, who am I? I know who I am, and I don't speak well. Last I checked, and since you've spoken to me, nothing's really changed. And so why would you call me for this? Who am I? Now, modern psychology would tell us, when someone asks a question like this, we go into build-up mode, and we try to sow into their lives and rally around them and just kind of build them up. And so God could have said, Moses, who are you? Moses, you are amazing. Moses, you are a rising star. Moses, you want to know who you are? You are awesome. And I see greatness all over you, Moses, and you can do anything you set your mind to, boy. I'm telling you, Moses, come on. And you know what? God doesn't even address his question. It's like Moses says, God, who am I? And God says, yeah, we'll get to that. Matter of fact, look, he doesn't even address the question. But Moses said to God, who am I that I should go to Pharaoh and bring the children out of Israel? And God said, but I will be with you, and this shall be a sign for you. It's like, did you not hear what I just said? Who am I? And God says, I'll be with you, and this will be a sign for you that I have sent you. When you have brought the people out of Egypt, you shall serve God on this mountain. In other words, listen. Here's what God's saying. Moses, all you need to know is that I'm going to be with you. Moses, all you need to know is that I got this. Listen. God is saying, Moses, the solution to your insecurity, Moses, is not for me to tell you how great you are, but for you to realize how great I am. And so we're not going to go into this of me sowing into you because, hey, I agree with your assessment of yourself, but it's really not about you. It's about the God and his greatness that dwells inside of you. And you know who I am? I'm the God of the ages, Abraham and Isaac, Jacob. That's who I am. Hey, listen, today, if you struggle with insecurities, the solution isn't for God to build you up. The solution is for us to recognize the greatness of the God who lives inside of us. And so God just sidesteps all of his concerns, and he just continues to say, but here's what matters. I will be with you. Let's talk about what's in a name. Exodus 3:13, Moses said to God, okay, so I'm going to do this. But if the people come to me, God, people of Israel come and say to them, if I come to the people of Israel and say to them, the God of your fathers has sent me, and they ask me, what is his name, then what shall I say to them? Now, in Jewish culture, a name was not merely an arbitrary designation. It conveyed the nature and the essence of the thing named, and that's very important. It represented the history of that being named and the reputation of that being named. And we do that as well today. If we say someone has a good reputation, we may say he or she has a good name. When selling a company, there is something called goodwill. Well, they can charge for you to use the good name of the company. And the Hebrew concept of a name was very similar to this. And so Moses asked God, if they ask me who you are, then what do I tell them? Now, Moses was asking, what is your name? But more than that, I think he was saying, who are you and what are you like and what is your reputation and what is your nature and what have you done? And God replies, he says, you want to know more about me? God says, tell them this. Look at Exodus 3:14. And God said to Moses, I am who I am. And he said, say this to the people of Israel, I am has sent me to you. You see, before Jesus ever used those two words, it was spoken 1,500 years prior to God, who was speaking to Moses about going into the most powerful man of the world and telling him, I am, is telling you to release his people. Now, this phrase, I am, it's difficult for us to even comprehend because it's so deep and so wide. It is all-encompassing, is what God was saying. He's saying, in this name, he exists apart from any other influence, and he causes what is to be. He says, my nature cannot be declared in words, that it cannot be conceived by human thought. So all I can tell you, if you want to know who I am who I am. I exist as nothing else exists. My existence is different from all other existence. And if I have to give myself an expressive name of my nature, then if I must fit it into language, the best thing that I can tell you is, I am. And I can see Moses be like, okay, I kind of missed the last little bit of it's I am what? And then, no. I am. And we go, hey, God, I lost you. Maybe this side of the bush would be a little clearer. What did you say? I am. And there's this idea of what God is communicating. He said, tell them that the self-existent one is the one who has sent you. Tell them that the eternal and unchangeable one has sent you. Tell them that the incomprehensible one is the one who has sent you. God says, Moses, listen. Moses, I'm sending you to the most powerful man in the world to disrupt an entire empire. And you're missing the most important part because, Moses, I agree with you and your assessment of yourself. And I agree with the question that you ask, who am I? Moses, you don't have enough. You will never be enough. You are not enough. But catch this part. But here's what you're missing, Moses. I am. See, Moses, you're not enough, but I am. It's that big of an open-ended statement. Whatever it is that you're not, Moses, I am. And Moses said, but God, I'm not very good at speaking, and I'm slow in tongue. And God said, I know. And Moses said, I'm not very good and skilled, and I'm not good at speaking. And God said, but I am. And Moses said, God, hey, God, I'm not very confident in my ability. And God said, but I am. And then he said, God, I'm not a very good leader. And God's like, but I am. See, I'm a great leader, and I can put the words in your mouth that are needed. Whatever it is that you're lacking, I am. I'll step into all of it. It was that big of a statement. Whatever it is that is needed to be, I am. So go and tell them that I am sent you. Now let's talk about these names of God. Because you realize that God has a name, right? God is a title, but it's not his name. Lord can be a title, but it's not his name, and it's not a secret. Look at Isaiah 42. I am the Lord. Notice it's in all caps. That is my name, God says. My glory I give to no other, and my praise to carved idols. Now, there's a difference between capital L-O-R-D and then all caps, Lord, that I want us to look at. If you're reading through the Old Testament, there are many times that you're going to see Lord as the top one, and then other times you're going to see Lord in all caps. Anytime you see Lord in all caps in Scripture, it is a substitution for the name of God. every time that you're going to see that. Anytime you see it. So we could say this. Go to the next slide. Here's what it actually would say. I am YHWH. That is my name. See, Lord was not the word that was originally written here. YHWH was the actual word in the Hebrew text. And so we could say that passage would better to read that I am YHWH. God says that is my name. And this name first appeared in Genesis chapter 2. We'll put it up on the screens for you. These are the generations of the heavens and the earth when they were created. In the day that the Lord, all caps, God, made the earth and the heavens. It could read, in the day that YHWH made the earth and the heavens. This is a specific, this is the name of God. Now, back to our text, Exodus 3:15. God also said to Moses, say this to the people of Israel, the Lord, all caps, the God of your fathers, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, the God of God of Jacob, has sent me to you. This is my name. His name is not Lord. This is my name forever, and thus I am to be remembered throughout all generations. It would be better to be translated, YHWH, the God of your fathers, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, the God of Jacob, has sent me. This is my name forever, is what God said. When God is referred to as Lord, capital L, lowercase, O-R-D, typically linked to the word that is Adonai. Look at Genesis 18:27. Abraham answered and said, behold, I have undertaken to speak to the Lord. I am but dust and ashes. It's always bad to pause after but dust, because if you say it several times, it's but dust, but dust. Okay, maybe I'm just childish, but I think that's funny. All right, so moving right along. So a different translation. It's Adonai or in the Hebrew, the other spelling there. But this is what we're dealing with. So let's talk about why the substitution of words. At some point in the Jewish history, sometime 3rd century B.C., the name of God, the YHWH, was seen to be ineffable. An ineffable name, or a name that is unutterable, that it could not even be spoken. People began to think that the name YHWH was so holy that mere mortals could not even let the word pass over their lips. And so sacred was his name in the Mishnah, which is the Jewish oral traditions written down, that in the Mishnah it said that anyone who spoke the name YHWH would not inherit eternal life. I mean, it was that strong that the scribes who would write out the text from one to another. That's how we have so many of the manuscripts today of the Old and the New Testament. When scribes would write this name out, when they would come to the YHWH, whatever that word was, they wouldn't even write the entire word. They wouldn't put in the vowels, or they wouldn't put in accent marks. All they would write is the YHWH. H, because the name was so holy, they didn't even want to write it. And so anytime that you see capital L-O-R-D, that's the name. Now, here's what might be interesting to you. They would only write the four letters. It's a tetragrammaton is what it's known as. Tetra, coming from the word Tetris, which is a 1980s video game. I thought that was funny too, but apparently, I'll erase that one from the second service. Because they never wrote the vowels out because it was so holy, over the years, we're not even sure what the vowels are. We don't know. We're guessing at what they are. And so we have put in the vowels A and E. We'll go to that next slide there, which we get the Y and the HW and the H, where we come up with Yahweh, and there are other variations of this translated into German language where we'll get Jehovah out of it. But the idea is W-H-Y-H, we're not even sure what the vowels are. And so this has been scholars that passed down this knowledge of the correct pronunciation for many generations, but eventually the correct pronunciation, it was lost entirely. And so what started out as maybe a noble, pious idea made the pronunciation of God's personal name to vanish from human consciousness. We're not even sure what it is. All we know is the W-H-Y-H, and we fill in best. Now, here's why I tell you all this. Jesus steps into this culture. The most sacred and sensitive of all subjects, God and the name of God, would not even be spoken, would not be written. Replaced it throughout all of their holy texts because in fear that they may take God's name in vain. So let's not even call him by his name. We'll just call him Lord. Jesus steps into Jerusalem, the most holy of cities and the most volatile of cities of its time, of what was about to erupt. And now Jesus walks in to a culture that will not even pronounce the name of God. And Jesus walks in and says, I am. Look what he says in John 8, 57 and 58. So the Jews said to him, you are not yet 50. He was talking about Abraham. You are not yet 50 years old, and you have seen Abraham? And Jesus said to them, truly, truly, I say to you, before Abraham was, I am. Can you get an idea of why the people were irate and the religious leaders wanted to crucify him? Because not only did Jesus claim to be on the level of God by using this term, I am, later on he calls God Abba Father, which is this term of great intimacy. Now you're speaking to people who would not even mention the name of God, and now Jesus says, this God that you've put off on a distance, he wants to draw near, and he is your Abba Father in a sense. He is your daddy. And they were like, no, impossible. And Jesus steps into this culture, and he speaks such blasphemous things as, I am the bread of life. Do you want to know what I'm about? I am the good shepherd, and I am the resurrection, and I am the door, and I am the vine, and I am the light of the world. And the religious leaders wanted him killed. And the last of the I ams that we have not studied, John 14, 6 and 7. Jesus said to him, I am the way, and I am the truth, and I am the life. And no one comes to the Father except through me. And if you had known me, you would have known my Father also. Jesus says, you know what I am? I am everything you need. Do you know what I am? I have everything. I am everything that you need. All the gaps and all the holes and all the things that you're trying to fill in your life, Jesus says, I am the one who should fill that. And so we would say, Jesus, are you provider? And Jesus would say, I am. Are you sustainer? I am that too. Jesus, are you deliverer? Yes, I am. Are you all-powerful and all-knowing? And Jesus would say, I am. And are you the good shepherd? And he would look you in the eyes and he would say, I am. Are you the light of the world? He would say, I am that too. And are you the door? I am. Are you the bread of life? Are you food for my soul? And he would say, I am that too. Jesus, are you the resurrection? I am. Are you my peace even when life is toxic? I am. Are you a savior and redeemer and teacher and comforter and healer? I am. Whatever it is that you are in need of, I am. Let's watch this video piece.
Before fluorescent formations ever fomented the foundations of your firmament, that is, before the stars in your sky ever entered existence, before the light knew what bright meant, before the sky had a clue where up went, before either were ever invented, I am. Before terrestrial perennials terraced your planet's territorial terrain, that is, before the plants in your ground were ever ordained, before roots were ever arranged, before fruit had a taste, before either had a name, I am. Before the ocean had a bowl, before the surf discovered its role, before the grave was made Sheol, before man had a soul, I am. Before Eden was installed, before the garden serpent crawled, before the tree, before the fall, I am. For I am truth before there ever could be false. I am perfection before there ever could be false. I am by all, in all, through all, in all, and I am to be called. I am. Before the curse usurped the ground and drove you away from the divine. Before you felt this separation between who you are and the intention of your design. Before you tried to abide in sources of death in order to find life. Before you combined yourself with any form of pleasure you could find. Before you felt so alone, before you felt so dry. Before you tried to run away from my side. I am the vine. Before the cherubim ever guarded the garden, before the flaming sword was ever sharpened, before that chasm between God and man was ever widened, before you lost all hope in becoming a citizen of heaven, before all you earned was endless flame, before all you deserved was righteous pain, before you were a sheep hoping not just to be some lion's prey, before you were a lost lamb longing for a pen, longing to escape your fate, I am the gate. Before sustenance turned to gluttony and food became an enemy, before attraction was based on anatomy and sex was removed from matrimony, before money became morality and greed grew into the only causality, before you were empty without me, before you tried to satisfy your appetite with anything, before you strive to feel alive by filling your strife with the fleeting vices of your fleshly devices, before your hunger for relief left pangs in your side, I am the bread of life. Before you became acquainted with pain and death, before you ever tasted loneliness, before disease destroyed what you possess, before eyes could go blind, before ears could go deaf, before you lost the one you love to the grave's unyielding cleft, I am. For before mankind stopped living so that they might just survive, I am the resurrection and the life. Before that sadness that grips your mind led you to darkness and thoughts of suicide. Before that distortion of man hurt you so that you now hurt yourself. Before you knew razors and wrists could create a new hell. Before those wounds turned to scars and those scars became a way of life. I am the light. For before you even knew how to sin, I am where your salvation begins. For before you withdrew from the path of my way, before you willfully and joyously disobeyed, before you betrayed the gift that I gave of that breath in your lungs, that life in your airways, by saying no to my love and yes to your heresy, before you engaged with the enemy, waged in sin with intensity, before you deranged my supremacy, inflame my jealousy, before you chose greed over my adequacy, lies over my accuracy, pride over my advocacy, before you chose your sinful self over me, I am the good shepherd who lays down his life for his sheep. For before you were a spotted lamb, I am. For I am the way before you could ever run away from my call. I am the truth before you could ever walk away from my law. I am the life before you could ever turn away from my cross at Golgotha's skull. So I beg you now to withdraw. Withdraw from your sin, for I am your only temptation. Withdraw from yourself, for I am making you a new creation. Withdraw from your pride, for I am ruining your reputation. Withdraw from your self-righteousness, for I am your only mediation. Withdraw from your hopes and dreams, for I am your only expectation. Withdraw from your life, for I am your crucifixion. For before all time, I am all sufficient. Before all time, titles and designations, to my name alone did the cosmos listen. For I am Jesus, I am the Word, I am Elohim, I am the Lord, I am the Christ, I am Messiah, I am Creator, I am Jehovah Jireh. I'm the name of God, I am Emmanuel, I'm the begotten Son, I am the Holy One of Israel, I am the first fruits, I am the Prince of Peace, I am the Bridegroom, I am the King of Kings, I'm the God of Abraham, I'm the God of Jacob, I am the Alpha, I am the Omega, I'm the Holy One worthy of praise, so withdraw into my side, withdraw and be made mine, withdraw and with me stay, withdraw. draw into my way.
Jesus said that I am the way, and I am the truth, and I'm the life. Let's leave lights down, please. This is so much bigger than what we may realize at first. That this statement is so much larger when Jesus spoke the words, I am. So, as we close in worship, would you just ask God to just begin to open your mind, your spirit, to see more fully, more clearly who he is, what falls under that I am umbrella.